Okay. Purim, Tavshanayin Aleph. This week and next week, Mitzvah will be doing Purim and working with some of the fundamental themes that arise from the Megillah and Purim Torah. And when we say Purim Torah, we don't mean silly nonsense so-called Purim Torah, but Purim Torah is so fascinating and eye-opening because since Purim, as you well know from being here, is a glimpse at Achris Hayamim. It gives us a sense of the ultimate rectification and tikkun of all things. It has within it, of course, all the origins, right? The origin of all things. Haman min haTorah minayin. Where does Haman, the archenemy, the Malach HaMaves, you know, the example of everything evil and bad in the world come from? Hamin ha'etz, right back to the Eitz HaDaas. We have spoken about that for a long time. And there's so many, everything goes back to the Eitz HaDaas, and we hopefully are not really going to focus on it today because there's so many applications to that now that we have, hopefully, in this class, a well-established understanding of what the Eitz HaDaas is and what this concept of the self is and what the concept of true attachment to the Eitz HaChaim is, right? The self attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which gives true expression. We have that down pat, I hope. So with that as a basis, we're going to go way... We're going to go off way further now. But Purim, Chazal say, not only is a glimpse at Achris Hayamim, but what we're going to focus on today is something fascinating, which is that Purim has an aspect to it which is defined only by limitlessness, infinity, no boundaries, almost like no limitations. We're going to start out by giving a number of examples of this unusual aspect of Purim. That is unlike every other, you know, any other yontiv, and try to get to the core of how our actual celebration of Purim, Megillah, Matanos Levyonim, Shalach Manos, and the Suda itself are expressions of limitlessness, infinity, forever, ultimate truth, Achros Hayamim. And the reason why it's so fascinating is because the Purim story is so unlike every other story in Tanakh. There's no open miracles, as you know, and there's no direct prophecy, go tell the Jews so and such and such. And even the nace takes place, you know, just by a matter of what looks like random coincidences stretching out over many, many years, almost a decade. And only in hindsight does it all come together. And even the manner of the nace is so strange, so you might say unappealing, that she had a be involved with Achashverosh and get Achashverosh to consider that maybe she's involved with Haman and get him jealous and the party, and we have other names for those kind of parties, and the whole way the Nes came about doesn't seem like Tanakh, right? Doesn't seem like the Nisim and Tanakh. And yet, on the other hand, Purim, as we said, is deeply rooted not only in the deep past but in the ultimate future. So here we have a few examples of the limitlessness, the ultimate tikkun that Purim is, the concept of the perfection of the end of days, which is actually, you know, kind of distilled from this unusual, you know, mundane-seeming story. So first of all, in Esther, Perek Tes, Pasuk Chaf Ches, look to the end of Perek Tes, chapter 9. V'hayamim ha'ela niskarim v'nasim b'chol dar v'dar. These days, which are going to be the 13th, which is the day we celebrate with the Tanis, which was really the day of victory, will be remembered and be done every generation, family to family, location to location, city to city. V'yemei ha-purim ha-eila, listen to these words, lo yavru mitoch ha-yehudim. They will never pass. They will never be abandoned, forgotten, no longer celebrated amongst the Jews, v'zichram, and the memory of them, lo yosef mizaram, will never stop being, something that we continue to abide by, to celebrate, will never be forgotten. Now, based on this, the Medrash in Mishlei says, the famous thing that you've all heard, the Medrash says we derive from this pasuk, in the end of the Megillah, that all yamim tovim are going to be batal, Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, but not Purim. And Rambam in Hilchos Megillah says, not only all Yomim Tovim, all the Sifrei Tanakh are butl, other than the Megillah and Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Somehow Purim makes all the miracles, all the holidays, all the prophecies no longer necessary. Purim is limitless. It's our bridge to the future, to the perfect world where none of this is necessary anymore. When it's all done. So that's number one. Where in the Purim story do you see that? What about the Purim story is so elemental to us, so basic to us, that it starts with the Eitz Hadas, as we said, Haman Min HaTor Minayin, and it stretches beyond where everything else is over and done with, Purim remains. In addition to that, not only is the Yontiv of Purim for the future, superseding all other Yom Tovim, the joy that we express on Purim supersedes the way we celebrate the joy or the happiness of any other holiday. On every holiday, there's always a framework of limitations. How much matzah, how much maror, right? How much wine, that's natural for Shabbos, there's a Revius, every Yontiv, every celebration has limitations. Purim, there's no limits. The joy is boundless. Ad lo yada, till you can't even think anymore, till you're almost released from the cords that bind your thought process. You're allowed to imagine anything. You don't even know if it's Haman or Mordechai. Let your imagination go. There's a limitless joy on Purim. And that limitless joy on Purim reflects the nature of Purim, which is limitless, infinite, will still remain with Klal Yisrael when all Yom Tovim are batel, when all the Sifrei Tanakh are batel, except Chamisha Chumshei Torah, Purim remains. So that's huge. What are Chazal telling us about Purim? Okay, in addition to this, we talk about this endless, unending, this limitless aspect of Purim, also, by the way, in Shoshanas Yaakov, Chuasam Hayisa LaNetzach. This salvation is eternal. Nothing will take it away. In addition to this, there is a strange Gemara that speaks about Purim in terms of Tchias HaMesim, the end beyond even Yumos HaMashiach, the final, ultimate form of existence of man, which we refer to as Tchias HaMesim, which comes after Mashiach, that's also associated with Purim. So here is a strange Gemara, and you know from here that the Gemara doesn't write in, right, and everything has to be understood, and layers have to be peeled away, because this is never meant to be taken literally and openly. The Rambam son says this, you don't take this Medrash literally, of course. And this is the Medrash. It's in Megillah 7, Daf Zion, it's Amud Beis. Rava and Rav Zera had a Purim feast together. Ibasum, they became what? Right, and we're going to get to that basum is drunk, fragrance. You're going to jump back to our Parshas Tetzaveh here, where we talked about the Ketores. Hope you can recall that a little bit. So they became drunk. Come, Rabba got up, shachte l'Rabbi Zera, and he killed Rabbi Zera. L'machar boi rachame v'achye. The next day, he prayed for Rachmanes, and he revived him, brought him back to life. Lashana Amrle, the following year, Rava asked Rav Zera to come to his party. Amrle, Rav Zera answered him, Lo b'chol shata v'shata misrache shnisa. No, and the miracles don't happen every time. Now, obviously, they didn't kill each other. I'm Purim and resurrect the, Rava didn't kill him and resurrect him the next day. So, but there's something that the Gemara is telling us here, that there's an aspect of Purim which is like you're dying and you're coming back to life. Okay, so that's another aspect of Purim which is completely unique. Tchias HaMesim, Achris HaYomim, right? All of that. In addition to that, one more aspect we call Yom HaKippurim, Kippurim, as if it's not even as great as Purim. We're going to look into that too. We're being told Purim is huge. It's forever. It will exist when everything else is butthole. It supersedes all Sifrei Tanakh except the Torah. The joy on Purim is limitless and without any boundaries. You don't have to hold yourself back. There's no Isurim. By the way, you know when there were no Isurim? Kodem HaChet. Mikol Eitz HaGan Ochel Tochel. In the beginning, Perek Aleph, the Kodem HaChet state that we always talk about of perfection, of Tzelem Elokim, of objectivity and truth, Hashem said, you can eat from all the trees. There's no Isurim, there's no limitation. Everything is available to you. No, that was after. You're allowed to eat from all the trees in Perek Aleph. Mikol Eitzagan Nachol Tochel. It's later when the Torah starts describing man's real challenges where it says you can't eat from the Eitz Hadas. But we have spoken about the idea many times here, and I don't want to go back through it. It's really the foundation for jumping forward, which is the Kodem Hachet existence, right? Which we call, where we talk about the total attachment to not the Eitz Hadas, but really the Eitz Hachayim, right? We talked about it last week in Pekudei. The expression of a person, the best self-expression of a person is when their expression of themselves is rooted, attached to, remember this? The Eitz Hachayim, the tree of life, l'machazikim batu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, really, and the Torah, then the truth, you know, runs, comes through the person and is expressed via the person themselves. And that's the ultimate sense of, as we said, pride, self-worth, importance, the ani. And all of this concept of this idea here that that Purim is even greater than Yom Kippurim, where we try to undo and we regret our mistakes, harkens back to that concept of man in a state of perfection. Now, at the same time, we're going to explain all of these things. There are some strange aspects of Purim. If it's so great and so important, and it's about Achros HaYamim, and it's infinite, and it's like the Kodem HaChet, where the joy, you could indulge in everything, and there's no limitations, because you're perfect, and you're even greater than Yom Kippur, and all of that, and it's like you've been reborn, like Tchias HaMesim, so then why don't we read Hallel? Why does Megillah replace Hallel? The Gemara asks this. Everything is in Maseches Megillah here. Why don't we read Hallel? And the answer simply is because Hallel is for an open and visible nace that everybody experiences, whereas the Megillah was a hidden nace. Okay, so you don't read Hallel. Well, if Purim is so big, why is it so hidden? Why is the importance of Purim, the secret to the you know that Purim is so essential, that Purim is everything, that Purim is you know the total tikkun, the total return to perfection? Why is it so hidden in this story? Why isn't it obvious? And in addition to that, it's very strange, and that is that we take the 13th of Adar, the day of the victory, and we celebrate it. Look in Perek Tes, again in the Megillah Pasuk Lamed Aleph, the end of the ninth Perek. We celebrate the day of the victory how? All right, Vikash. No, yeah, but here it says like this. Okay, so now they write Divrei Shalom the Emes, and then they accepted upon themselves, right? Kasher Kiyam Aleihem Mordechai HaYehudi VeEsther HaMalka, VeKasher Kimu Al Nafsham, that the Jews accepted on their souls, VeAlzarim, and for their descendants, Divrei Hatzomos VeZakosam. We accepted to fast and to cry and to pray and to almost like relive that fear of annihilation, and then the celebration comes after it. In other words, even the day of Purim is not celebrated as in a strange way. The day of the actual victory of this enormous end of days type of celebration is actually not celebrated on the day of the victory. The day of the victory is celebrated as a fast day, as a day of tefillah. The next day is celebrated with, as we know, as Purim, with all of these aspects that we just spoke about. But why is the actual day of victory commemorated first as a Tanis? It's also like, is it sad or is it happy? All right, so in order to work with all of these topics, we are going to ask a simple question, okay? How many right answers are there for 2 plus 2? How many right answers? There's one right answer, okay. How many wrong answers are there? Okay, now stop. Let's say we choose one of the wrong answers. You know when you do a complicated math equation and there's many, many, many steps to it? If you get the wrong answer in the first part of the equation, okay? Let's say some 2 plus 2 is 4. 2 plus 2 times 6 divided by 3 times 8 times 14 divided, you know, you have a whole long equation. What if you get the wrong answer, one of the infinite wrong answers, at the very beginning of the equation? What happens? Everything is wrong. So actually what we consider as an infinite possibility, there's a million wrong answers, a million paths to choose, all of them lead to greater and greater actually lies, untruths, and can you build a house or conduct business or organize your books according to this type of mathematics where there's a mistake built in? Of course not. If you choose the one right answer, which is limited, it's only one, there are no options, actually what you've just done is you've given yourself the possibility of the infinite, right, of infinity, of going from step to step to step, building on one truth, building on the next truth, until there's no end to what you can do with 2 plus 2 is 4. Right? It could express itself in the most highest mathematics and all kinds of most sophisticated structures and explanations, really, of the entire world ultimately reduces to correct mathematics, right? So actually choosing one correct path is the key to infinity, limiting all the false options, and choosing any of the other ones is actually going to get you nowhere, is going to get you to destruction. Now, the concept that we started speaking about in Tetzaveh, let's go back for a minute. Who gave Moshe the secret to the Ketores? Remember? The Malach Hamavis, right? Does this sound familiar? The Malach Hamavis gave Moshe the secret to the Ketores. The secret to that is, right, and we talked about what a Malach is, it's a force, right, a force, the force of destruction. That Malach Hamavis that gave Moshe the secret to Ketores is really the concept, as we've spoken about, another way of speaking of Eitz Hadas, and it's another way of speaking about Purim. Why is it another way of speaking about Purim? Because in the Purim story is all kinds of references to the Ketores, to Bisamim. For example, Mordechai, here, it's in Daf Yud. Min HaTorah Minayin. Where is Mordechai in the Torah? Mordror. What's that? The first Rosh Lebisamim, the first of the spices listed in Kisisa for that we just did a few weeks ago for the Ketores. Mordror. Targum says Mari Dechi. Mordechai. Esther. What was her real name? Hadassah, you know where the source to that is. That's a myrtle. Tzadikim are a myrtle. They smell. They have a beautiful smell. Notice how tzadikim and smell always go together. Remember Yosef? Yes. Tzadikim are very sensitive to smell. What was about... Hold on, wait. Moshe and Yosef. What was the story with Yosef and smell? Remember the... When he was sold to the Ishmaelim, who normally carry neft, which is oil, which smells terrible, they happened to be carrying besamim, spices. Okay, so because a tzaddik is very sensitive to smell. Moshe, remember with the tar inside the teva. Also, furthermore, chayav adam libsume bapuria. What does besume really mean? So they're related to which word? Besamim. We translate it as intoxicated on wine, but it really means also intoxicated through wine, but really to a degree where you're intoxicated with fragrance. Okay, with fragrance. Libsume, there's something about fragrance. Okay. What about fragrance? How do you smell? Through the nose. Well, what else is clearly associated, we did this many times, with the nose? Neshama, neshima, vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim. The neshama comes through the nose. Now, more than that, Yitzchak smells Yaakov, smells reyach begodav, the smell of his clothing, and he says, oh, this smells like soda, the field that Hashem has blessed. What's that a reference to? Gan Eden. You can smell Gan Eden, okay? The Ketores was the keli, the vessel in the Mishkan, that elevated this concept of smell to an avoda, to a form of service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, this idea of smell is directly linked to Kodem HaChet. Remember what we said about Mashiach. Mashiach will not judge by what he hears and not judge by what he sees, but, remember, by smell. Not that Mashiach is going to go around smelling everyone, but what that means is you will be able to sense out if something is... What does a sense of smell do for us? What does all this besamim talk? What does all this neshima, neshama talk? Neshama is the source of life. It's the sense of smell that helps you determine if something's alive or dead. If you have a piece of meat in front of you, you don't have to look. You can't look at it and tell what's going on. You don't hear it. You don't actually have to taste it. What do? If you smell it, you know if it's fresh, alive, young, new, or if it's decaying and rotting and degenerating, right? Now, there's nothing more offensive than rotting flesh or something that was alive rotting like a flower, right? or an animal, or a person, or human waste, or anything, or you know, or animal waste, anything that was alive and now decays has an offensive, terrible smell, which we can't take. And the smell, there's nothing more pleasant than the aroma of a baby, of a new flower, or a fresh apple pie, whatever, right? It's the sense of smell that gives you an instant awareness, not from here, but intuitively, this is alive or this is dead. Now, when we talk about alive and dead, we don't just mean physically. Obviously, we mean in ruchnius. The whole concept now of the sense of smell, being sensitive, determining between life and death, Esther and Mordechai and Purim, all giving us a glimpse of real life, kodem hachet, before the chet. The only sense that was not tainted by the chet, you know this, is smell. She heard the nachash, she said, oh, it's tantalizing to look at, it's delicious to taste. She doesn't deal with the smell. The smell remains pure. The neshama, the neshima of a person, the aspect of a person that allows them to feel if they're alive, if they have a vibrant selim elokim, you know, within them, right? If they're attached to the Eitz HaChaim is another way of saying it, the other tree in the garden. By the way, the garden exists where? This is the garden, the Eitz HaDa'a subjectivity, it's here. The Eitz HaChaim, truth, it's here. It's what we're attached to, right? So, and a deeper level, obviously. So here, so the concept of the smell, the perfection of smell, the sensitivity to smell, the ability to for smell to determine if something is spiritually alive, like Yitzchak and Yaakov, or spiritually dead, that is all associated with that perfect state of existence where you just inhale and your neshama knows, are you alive or are you dead, right? And Haman, of course, represents Hamin ha'eitz asher marti lo sochel, from the tree I told you not to eat from it. Did you eat? Haman is when you, when you loosen your grip to real life and then you eat from the tree, which of course you all know means you indulge in your own total subjectivity, right? And you see things your perspective, etc. And the end result of that is every Haman, every Malach HaMavis, when does death come into the world? The sin. If you eat from the tree, b'yom ha'chol mimeno, the day you eat from it, most homeless, you're going to die. Die physically? No. But release the Malach HaMavis. Release the force of death and destruction in the world. Every time a person chooses to blind themselves, by the way, the opening of their eyes, post-chet, that is synonymous with saying the closing of their spiritual eyes, their intuitive awareness of what's to, emes, and sheker, and the opening of their subjective, limited, blind, foolish eyes that see things from only their own limited way. That opening the eyes is a huge diminution. It's no great achievement. You can't go greater from a sin. It's obviously a great fall. Rambam talks about this in the beginning of the Mor Nevuchim. A whole different way of apprehending things from your own eyes, your own perspective, which is another form of blindness. Right? So that's Haman. Every ultimate Malach HaMavis, every megalomaniac who wants to destroy the whole world and lives in a web of delusion that they're going to set it up their way. And the Malach HaMavis, which exists in every single person, the force of self-destruction, that if I do it my way, it'll make me satisfied and I'll assert myself. And in the end, every time we're blind to the bigger picture, the real truth, we just respond to ourselves. We begin to self-destruct in many ways, and we even feel it with the guilt, the frustration, then the hopelessness, the sense of loss. Most people sin. Believe it or not, I mean, we experience this, not because only they feel, I want to express myself, and I don't care because I'm the center of the world. Many people sin. Often sin comes from the concept of the I. Who am I? What's the point? I don't even know who I am. I haven't found myself. The person who doesn't know they're rooted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that through them God will be appreciated in this world, and they feel worthless. And so what's the difference? What does God care what I do? Who cares if I do this or that? What do I matter anyway? There's no sense of kavod, no sense of ani because it's rooted, but I and nothing, worthless, who cares? Ani switched around, right? That's also. So that all comes from a blindness to the sense of the individuality of the person. Now, all the concepts of the smell come from kodem hachet. the beauty, the perfection, the ability of the nose to determine. We said the Malach HaMavis gave Moshe, and this is really what we want to focus on now. The Malach HaMavis gave Moshe the secret of the Ketores. What that means is a profound insight into how we operate and what is true living. That the only way to experience being alive is to overcome the Malach HaMavis. The Malach HaMavis is the source of the Ketores. Is the source of our experiential. It's as if we feel it in ourselves that we're alive, because in ourselves we know we just overcame the Malach HaMavis, which is subjectivity, the self, self-destruction, not seeing the truth, not attaching to the truth. That's the ultimate self-destruction, right? We overcome that. It happens privately. It happens in our head. And the joy we feel of our own victory, which can be compared to these inhaling, so to speak, the Ketores, feeling alive, knowing we're attached, knowing we're back kodem hachet, feeling in us real, you know, the kesher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the sense of inhaling and feeling your neshama really dominant, really guiding you. That is a private, hidden, secret experience of coming back to life. Now the themes, right, are coming together. That's coming back to life. That's Tchiyas HaMesim. Because as long as a person is in the grip of death, self-destruction, they feel it. It feels horrible. It might look like the person is alive and they're eating and they're drinking and they're all of that, but they really in the core feel terrible if they think about it for a minute. Because it's all coming and going. Eat, drink, and be merry, because we're going to die. There's no real rootedness. So rootedness means that we do express ourselves, use our individual personality to really be a conduit for to bring the truth to the world. And then when a person makes that choice, versus just like a Pavlovian dog responding to every button being pushed, they feel the victory of escaping death and living, and it's all hidden. So what happens is, where is Esther min HaTorah Minayin? Haster Aster Panai. In other words, there's two Anochis. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the great revelation at Sinai, where Hashem teaches us what's life, right? Bacharta Bachayim, and shows us the great miracles. But then there's another Anochi. Anochi Haster Aster Panai. I am going to hide myself. And you're going to have to find that life, that achievement, that connection to the Eitz HaChayim yourself, right? Here's the thing. You give two people a task. Turn off the lights. It's pitch black. And they have to identify other people in the room. One person gets a flashlight and one person doesn't. The one with a flashlight, easy, done, takes a second. What about the one without a flashlight? They have to become very perceptive to the little nuances, the shape of the nose and the eyebrow and all of that stuff. It's a whole skill set that has to be developed to look through the darkness, through the night, through and come up, be like a detective, become very perceptive to all the little indications of who this might be, right? Klal Yisrael, when they find themselves in Golus and Hashem hides his face, it's like turning off the flashlight, and we become as a nation very, very skilled at picking up, we become skilled and very, you know, kind of aware, sensitive to how to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, find the truth, find the real, what's really worth attaching ourselves to, despite the fact that it's very confusing. And when we do it ourselves, once you turn the lights on afterwards, we already have a very developed skill set that we can do it. We have developed an ability to see through the darkness. When Hashem says, Anochi Haster Aster Panai, I'm hiding my faces. So Klal Yisrael develops the skill within themselves to identify life and death, to smell it out intuitively, to get a whiff and to know what's death, what leads to ultimately the Hamans and self-destruction, the Malach HaMavis, and what is life. And that joy of victory, of overcoming the natural, this is the point, it is natural. When we get kicked out of Gan Eden, as we know from learning here, in other words, when real life starts, we've already eaten from the Eitz HaDaas. We're already in the grip of self-delusion, of attaching to Sheker, of choosing to answer 2 + 2 in a billion different ways. One day this way, that way, this way, this way. We have a million different options. A million fantasies, a million possibilities, right? We're already there. The normal gut, gravitational force, what's automatic, the Pavlovian dog response is, any situation that takes place, I react to it first, my way, according to my individuality. But then when a person stops, that's the Malach HaMavis, inside a person. Then a person stops, chooses, knows who what they're really attached to, then that is its sense of being alive, of overcoming. The Malach HaMavis gives Moshe, says the Ketores will over, is the power of the Ketores is from overcoming the Malach HaMavis. People jump out of planes, right? Because the experience that they feel, the thrill they feel that they just almost died, and now they're alive, is this huge high. That's the same experience of overcoming the Malach HaMavis. Now let's get back more to Purim here, okay? First of all, we said that's what Purim is forever, and Purim is the joy in Purim is limitless. Because the joy that comes from Purim is the joy of the Jewish people as a nation, but also personally, it's also always taken on an individual level, confronting the power, the threat of total annihilation, total self-delusion. Haman is the poster child for self-delusion, correct? And by the way, all of these megalomaniacs live in a web of self-delusion because they create it for themselves. Because they shut out all the right, they shut out the one right answer, and they come up with 1,000 wrong answers. By the way, for example, you know, all these dictators, they truly live in a web of delusion. Because, for example, Saddam Hussein, they would tell that the officers of his army would never report that they lost a battle, because there was no way, the ammunition is outdated, and the soldiers have no shoes, and there was no food. Because if they lost a battle, what would happen to them? They'd be killed. So what do they report? That they won the battle. They literally can create for themselves total blindness and delusion, and then they believe it. And then they do this for their people by blocking out all information. And this blindness that we look at and we see how they're living and we can't believe it, is for them a reality. It's a complete and total reality. That's how they think. They really think according to their blindness. So that Haman is the total representation of that. He imagined that everything he was doing was promoting himself, and really everything he was doing was destroying himself, right? So that concept of being faced with annihilation, the external Malach HaMavis, which always shows itself in this extreme form, right? That's the extreme version of it. The internal, that being faced with annihilation, and then knowing how to combat it. How did Klal Yisrael combat this great threat of the Malach HaMavis? Through davening, through kimu v'kiblu. They accepted the Torah. They knew that real existence, real self-preservation, comes from attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If they're attached to Hashem, they're eternal, like Hashem is eternal. That was the antidote to Haman's sense of his, that he was going to set up the world his way, and destroy everyone who didn't see things his way or was a threat to him. Klal Yisrael's response is, there's only one right answer. And if you're not attached to it, you'll only destroy yourself, whatever. There's a million different Hamans and versions of the wrong answer. In the end, they all self-destruct under their own weight. And in the end, there's only one right answer. And that represents, and attaching to that is the concept of, you're alive, you're Kodem Achet. So now going back to some of our questions, in the end, that's the objective of this entire purpose, the whole path through history. Purim's the tachlis. It's the end game. It's where we get to. It's when we recognize that there's no point anymore. We've learned through history, through trial and error, we ourselves and all the nations of the world, that any other answer to the question is the wrong answer. It'll exist for a moment, and then it will crumble, as we said, under its own weight. And who will be left standing? The truth will be left standing. What was always the truth, always the one right answer, is going to be left standing. And that means that it's really, there's no point for any more of the Nevi'im and the prophecies and the Musar and the Divrei Chachma and the stories of the miracles, because now the miracle is taking place through our own emerging self-awareness. That's the Tchiyas HaMeisim. That's where Hashem hides himself, and then the truth starts to come from us. We start to recognize it by just by process of elimination, by just looking at history, by just recognizing it's always, this pattern is a repetitive pattern. Every other answer is the wrong answer, and there's only one right answer. And that joy of attaching to life, overcoming death and attaching to life, choosing the right answer, which opens all doors, is so limitless It brings us back to a state of exuberance, of excitement, of sensing true chayim that is only compared to Eitz Hadas Kodem Achet, the perfection of man. Now, very interesting applications to this. Number one, we said that Rava killed Rav Zera. It's a reference, it's a hint to the idea that the emerging truth within the person, in a sense, is Mechaya them, reveals them. Just like when they received the Torah the first time, every time Hashem spoke, they died, right? And then they had to be revived. What does that really mean? That really means that they experienced a certain degree of life, a certain degree of existence, a high, you know, they got to the next Madrega, and that came to an end, so to speak, and then they were reborn and appreciated it, elevated themselves, achieved even the next higher Madrega, a constant sense of starting from the beginning. Because when a person finds that inner strength within them, and they feel that they have chosen life, and they're energized. It's like every time they feel that energy, it's a brand new, first time experience of now, you know, today is the first day of the rest of my life. By the way, we feel that experience. They talk about that when you exercise physically, you feel more alive, you have those pheromones, there's a certain enthusiasm. So it's something which constantly jumps to new levels, and each new level is like Tchias HaMesim. It's not like the level before it. It's like a whole new thrilling experience. And what about the Yom Kippur thing? Interestingly enough, Yom Kippur represents our life here before Purim. We're always trying to do the right thing, but sometimes we do the wrong thing, so we do all the Al-Chet, and we ask Mechila, and it's a lot of regret, and looking backwards, and how we did what we wanted, and not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, and how we're so seduced by the tree, and how it's so hard to hold on to the MS, right? And we represent that by regret and looking backwards. Purim, there's no indication of that. It is looking forward for the future, ultimate celebration. It's going to be preserved forever. It's the joy. Klal Yisrael will enjoy this with that, you know, for eternity. There's no sense of looking back anymore. And more than that, the mechila that we ask our friends transforms into shalach manas and matanas levyonim. In other words, it's not regretting that we didn't do the right thing and we put ourselves before our friend, right? That's really the Eitz Hadas, we first. And that's where all the Ben Adam L'Chavero Averas come from. And therefore in Yom Kippur, you got to ask Mechila and regret all those things that come from the Eitz Hadas. But Purim, you're way past that. You're Matanis Levyonim, and you're doing Shalach Manas because your friend is you, and you are your friend. And there's an Achdus, and there's a harmony, and it's not about me. It's about the big picture. And that's why we give half a shekel. And all the half a shekels combine together to buy the Karban Tamid. And it's about Klal Yisrael and the Megillah always gathering and doing everything together and davening together, right? And celebrating forever together. That's the whole Achdus theme going on. That's the transition, much greater in a sense than Yom Kippur. Because we're past, we're not regretting that we didn't do it right. We're so alive with just automatically being, feeling what's right and doing what's right. And there's no more delusion. And there's no more mistakes ben adam l'chaveru which come from that. So it's in a different experience, and that's why we don't say Hallel. Hallel is when something is open and obvious, but the Tchias HaMesim, the victory of overcoming the Malach HaMavis, Purim and the Megillah teach us that it's hidden. It's hidden in every person. That experience is a personal, private experience that rejuvenates the person, and also for Klal Yisrael, it's all hidden. On a national level, this concept, this idea of overcoming the threat of total annihilation happened in a way that you have to be very perceptive to figure out. You got, it's like when it's in Gullus, without the flashlights, and through all the little coincidences, we're recognizing what's really right and what's really wrong here and what's really going on. Now, there's some also fundamental applications to this. We say that Kol Ha'omer Davar B'Shem Amro Mevi Geula La'olam. That comes from Pirkei Avos, right? Kol Ha'omer Davar B'Shem Amro. Whoever says something in the name of who said it brings Geula to the world. So, right? So we have a rule from there, right? That when you give over Torah, you say, this is someone's Torah. So by the way, not to transgress, most 99% of these ideas are Rav Huttner on Purim. Okay? Rav Pinchas Stolper did it in English. In any case, You have to say in the name of who the Torah is, in whose name it comes. Now, if you do that, you bring Geula. Where do we learn this? We learn it from the Megillah. Esther reported to Achashverosh that Mordechai had said about Big Son and Zeresh. Remember? Okay, now, this idea, this comes from, by the way, Kol Omer Davar B'Shem Amro. I'll just give you the pasuk in the Megillah that you see it. Kol HaOmer Davar B'Shem Amro. Whoever says Torah, okay, whoever teaches Torah and acknowledges the individual whose Torah wisdom he is teaching, brings Geula to the world. Look at Esther, Perek Beis, Pasuk 22. A couple of little words that you don't even like, take so seriously. All right, by Yomru, Pasuk 22. Right, he heard Big Tan and Teresh, and they were planning to kill the king. So Mordechai found out. He told Esther, but Tomer Esther Lamelech b'shem Mordechai. Symbol. She told Achashverosh. She told the king in the name of Mordechai. From there, the Gemara learns out: if you say Torah in the name of the person who originated it and whose chiddush it was, then you bring geula. So Rav explains when you attach the Torah, the truth, to its bal mechadish, you're bringing the branch back to its root. Right, you bring the Torah, the idea, back to its root, to its source. And the person who is Machadesh is also a branch, and their Torah is also attached to a root. It's the same concept of saying being really alive. When the branch is connected to the root, then the branch has capacity to live when it's disconnected. So here, Esther, even this concept teaches us that the main idea of being alive, right, of being alive, of not only being alive, of total salvation, is when the outcome, the expression, is connected to the shorash, to the roots. When it comes straight through the person, when the person is not disconnected from their source. When what the person is expressing to the world, the Torah that the person is bringing to the world, is directly connected to their attachment that we call the Eitz HaChayim, right? More than that, we have a fundamental idea that it's a halachic concept. And it applies to women. We often grapple with this because on the surface it doesn't make any. We would think it's the opposite. I'd say it that way. And from here we learn that it's really MS to the core. Gadol mitzuva va'ose, me'enu mitzuva va'ose. It is the person who does a mitzvah that they're commanded to gets a greater schar, and it's on a higher level than a person who voluntarily does a mitzvah. Simply. Because when a person does a mitzvah voluntarily, who are they expressing? Themselves. Even if it's a beautiful expression of themselves, because they love the Torah, and therefore they're doing a mitzvah, but they're not obligated, so the Torah is coming through them, so it's wonderful. It's an act of beautiful self-expression, which is expression of the Torah. It's beautiful. But there's a higher madriga. It's much harder to want to express yourself, but to hold yourself back and do what the Torah says you should do. Mitzuva vosu. This is what I have to do. This is my command. I'm compelling myself to express the ultimate truth through me. Now that is the most difficult challenge of all the challenges. Mm-hmm. For a person to merge their identity and see themselves as a total expression of the MS, of the truth. But on the other hand, it opens up, as we said, getting the right answer to 2 + 2 opens up infinite possibilities, whereas getting the wrong answer shuts you down right away. So when a person is mitzuva, they're commanded. That's the right answer to the question. And that's what they adhere to, and that's what they put their full energies into. It's the biggest challenge. It's called overcoming the malach hamavis, which doesn't want to do that, wants to be independent, nobody wants to think, in a simple way, nobody feels, and everybody resists the notion that they are put on this earth to live out someone else's dream, right? That's why we hate slavery. Nobody is created for the exclusive purpose of making someone else happy, of promoting someone else, of serving someone else, and of being an echo to someone else, and to living out someone else's dream. We resist it because of Artzel Melekim. On the other hand, if we are put on this earth exclusively to express Hashem's truth through us, we have an automatic kind of resistance, that's the Eitz Hadas, and yet to overcome that, that's overcome the Malach HaMavis, is to achieve real Chaim. And with this, Rav Huner brings down something so beautiful here. In the end of it, he says, Shlomo HaMelech, and with this we're going to wrap up, and if you have any questions or anything, Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles, Perek Beis, Pasuk 9, says, Af Chochmasi Amdali. Now, that's a funny phrase. Even my Chochma stood by me. It's kind of like denigrating Chochma. Like, okay, even Chochma stood by me. We always think of Chochma as the great achievement. Okay, even Chochma was good for me. As if it's limiting Chochma. So the Yalkut Shimoni says no. What he means here is, Af Chochmasi Amdali. The Chochma... Okay, wait, stop. Af. What else do we say? Charon af. Rage is af. Rage. The chachma I achieved due to the raging battles inside myself to choose between life and death, really. Myself, my agenda, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Emes and Sheker versus Tov V'Ra, right? To be alive versus to be dead. The raging battles, the af, the fury, the agitation that raged in me, that helped me make the right choices, that propelled me to further and further levels, that chokhmah that I achieved through the battle, through overcoming, that stood by me forever. That's the chokhmah that stood by me, that fortified me, that was eternal because it gave me the strength inside myself to know that I'm alive, to be attached to life, right? And that's really the secret of Purim. The chachma we gain from our internal knowledge that we could succumb to the Malach HaMavis, or we could fight it by attaching to the ancient, original truth, the only right answer to the question, that battle, that rage that I succeeded in, that gave me the real chachma that stood by me forever. Af chachmasi amdali. And that also, can we talk about the nose? When you achieve that kind of knowledge, that kind of wisdom, that kind of sense of life, you feel it. You smell it, right? You feel it. If you feel it inside of you, but it's hidden. And that's all the secrets for the Hester Punim, the masks, the hiding behind this kind of frivolous day, when inside what's going on is a total transformation. But only the person themselves knows about it, right? And by the way, in terms of Purim and Yom HaKippurim, say that Yom HaKippurim is all for Hashem, whereas Purim is all for us. It looks like it's all us. We're reading the Megillah, because it's a secret, it's the internal form of Hallel. We're having a Suda, which we're enjoying, Matanos Levyonim and Shalachmanos, it's all, we're in taking care of each other. It's all human-focused versus Yom HaKippurim, which is all focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what we're saying is, when it comes from us, when the strength rises from us, it's because of our achievement, our vanquishing, our, you know, the Malach HaMavis, either internally or externally, then it looks like it's us, but it's the real us. It's the us that is directly, completely expressed through, you know, because of our attachment, because of we know who we are, and that's forever. That is Lenetzach, and that is limitless. Okay. Yes. Questions.
I read something very interesting about the speech is when you're exhaling, basically. You're inhaling and you're exhaling. So we really have to work on, is HaKol Kol Yaakov, why is our power in our speech? That's one of the things that we could learn to attach ourselves to the Eitz HaChaim, by how we speak.
And correct. There's a lot of stuff about that, by the way. A lot of shtika. There's a lot of Rachel and a lot of Leia, a lot of shtika and a lot of Dibor. There's another theme going on in the Megillah, for sure. Yes. 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 Malach HaMavis is synonymous. The Gemara says, first it's the Yetzirah, and then it turns into the Malach HaMavis. And then, guess what? It turns into the Kateger. First it's your Yetzer Hara, Gemara says. That's how it's known to you. Then it's your Malach HaMavis. And then when you get up there, it's the prosecutor that says, you listen to me. You weren't supposed to. Yes, go ahead. The Yikar, yeah. Yeah, I don't remember exactly. But by Yikar is worth. Yeah, it's worth. Okay, everyone. Have a good week.